folks said that I would change my mind. I'd straighten up and do just fine. Ah, but I still love rock and roll. I keep on rolling with the flow.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. 251-343-0106. That is the text line. That's how you get in touch with the program. Still got a bunch of texts to get through. I promise I will get to them as soon as we get the opportunity. But it is just around the bend, so keep them coming, guys. Joining us now on the line, very pleased to bring on my next guest, a big favorite of our listeners, former state senator Tripp Pittman. Senator, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. I want to congratulate you on your bumper music. You're the king of the bumper music. That's all I got to say. It's the best. It's the best on radio.
I appreciate that. We're going to freshen it up one of these days. I've been talking about that for a year, but it'll be of the same genre for sure.
It's hard to mess with perfection, though.
Well, you could have the perfection. Once I get around to it, I don't want to oversell it, as I'm prone to do sometimes. Senator, let's kick it off here, and you and I got kind of a text message back and forth about this. So the Secretary of Commerce wants to remove caps on these economic incentives, but just in general, my perception of what the state is doing, it's probably fine 20 years ago to kind of get the ball rolling. But now it just seems a little cronyistic. It just seems picking winners and losers, favoring certain industries, that the real success is to make Alabama offer something these other states don't, right? And not just these specialized incentives. Maybe you could do both, but what is your take on the whole economic incentive structure in this state right now?
Well, I think it's political favoritism. I mean, politics is the process of dividing up other people's money. And so what happens is we collect all this money, you know, you've talked to legislators and people about, well, let's cut taxes, let's refund the money to the people. Well, that is the tax money and the credits and the incentives we give are other people's money, and people in the politics, and I've been there, you know, and in the political class, and those that benefit from it are all about how do I take that money, other people's money, and how do I spend it? And so it's gone way too far. I mean, certainly, you know, government is there to do certain very, very few things. You know, government, our constitutions are negative documents. They should say what government can do, but mainly what they cannot do. But we've expanded it, and it's gotten way out of hand. I've got information where I can get into the weeds on it. But regardless, to get back to the original point, you know, I was part of trying to stop certain tax credits. I was part of definitely trying to limit the tax credits that were given. I think all tax credits ought to be finite in terms of amounts of money and in terms of duration. I believe that every one of them should be sunsetted, primarily because you want them, you're going to get some you know, hype out of them. You're going to get the high from an incentive. And then, so we need to know, what is the residual? Do we need it again? And then how much has been given away? And in this Jobs Act, you know, we don't know how much has been given out every year over the past, you know, 7 or 8 years, but the cost of that won't be known for years to come. And, you know, based on Murphy's Law, I'm sure that the impact of those costs are going to hit us at a time when we're in very dire economic straits, and it'll compound the problem. But philosophically, Jeff, and you're a philosophical guy, and I hope most of the listeners are, philosophically, you know, the money ought to be left with the people. And government shouldn't be making the choices about picking winners and losers.
Well, we've been talking about this for 30 years now. My question is, when will enough be enough? When will we have done enough to juice up the economy that we could kind of get to a system that, you know, I'm all about economic incentives, but as long as they apply to everybody. Tripp Pittman and Jeff Poor wanted to go open up an auto manufacturing facility, would we get the same breaks as one of these foreign auto manufacturers? I don't think so. We want something that's going to inspire everybody to do big things, right?
Well, correct. Two things there. One, you're saying is this. you know, an overall good environment. And to that extent, you know, roads and infrastructure is good for everybody. You know, affordable and readily available power is very important. Low taxes, which, you know, if you want to match some of these other states you mentioned, you know, we've got a 5%, you know, income tax. I imagine a lot of the higher paid, salaried people that work for some of these companies we're giving incentives to, the hourly workers are paying Alabama sales tax. It's then Alabama income tax, sales tax, some of which is refunded through credits back to these companies. But I imagine the people that are making the big money, and you know, they're just making the choice that everybody makes. I mean, the biggest game in this country is how to avoid or defer paying taxes. And so I'm sure they're not living in this state. They're probably living in Florida that doesn't have any income tax, or some other state that doesn't. So overall, you want to say, yeah, what's a good environment for businesses, everybody to succeed? And then what else we do with these incentives, Jeff, is we create competition for the existing businesses. Because you're getting these credits based on credits of income tax, or payroll you're paying, and the income tax that your workers are paying, that now you get a chance to recoup some of that. These people are getting a hiring advantage against existing companies like mine and all the other existing businesses around the state. So we're subsidizing them at the cost of the existing businesses. Now, is that good when you have high unemployment? The argument can be made. But when we're down to, if you believe the numbers, and the numbers are skewed, but when we're at zero unemployment, are those people actually looking for jobs? Why are we out there incentivizing jobs and luring people away and making existing businesses now not only not get a fair advantage the political class is getting, but then we're getting our workers pulled away from people that have more money to give them than we did. So, yeah, I think right now, based on the unemployment numbers and the fact that we don't know the trailing cost of these incentives, that they certainly should not be, no cap should be taken off. I think it should have been sunsetted and let it work itself out. But there's a lot of reasons that you don't pour gasoline on a fire. You know, just like the recently passed Inflation Reduction Act that the federal government passed, which is anything but.
Well, it's just that it is. We got labor participation rate problems. What Canfield's doing, it's not just maintaining the status quo. What he wants to do, I mean, he wants to hyper accelerate this and remove the cap altogether. Ultimately, I guess the legislature would still have to allocate this, but right now there's that protection in place. It's just We got to start kind of thinking about shifting the focus on economic development to something that's a little more broad based.
Right, and this program was better than what we had before. I worked on this bill and I found my marked up copy that came out of the House. You know, and the first thing it says in the synopsis, the beginning is to cap the credits. That was in there with to help recruit businesses to allow certain carry forwards. I eliminated the transferability so people couldn't just sell the credits to other companies and through arbitrage. But to cap the credits, that is part of the reason this bill passed, and I wouldn't have supported it. And I had already stopped some bills previously that I didn't agree with. Anytime somebody puts a constitutional amendment on the ballot, they're trying to allow government to do something that they're not allowed to do from its inception. And in this case, a lot of times you have to have, you know, constitutional amendments passed to allow government to spend your money in ways, internal improvements is the general category, whether that's for infrastructure or for businesses. But these limits, you said in your opening statement, you know, when is this going to stop? It is the political class is insatiable. These groups, these people that get hired, these different directors of these different groups, they're there to try to give benefits to their members. And again, they're spending other people's money. So what they do is, you know, a deal is only a place to restart negotiations at a later date. And to echo that, you know, the Jobs Act and the Renewal Act were already established. You know, we agreed to this. But now, because more money is needed, even though the cap has never actually been reached in any one year, now because we're $20 or $30 million possibly from it, we need to take it off. And what I would say is the reason there's a cap is that you have to, first of all, realize what the cost is once we get to full capacity. How much is it actually? I mean, in cost. The cost is how much are taxpayers continuing to have to pay that they should be able to keep in order to fund all these giveaways that the government has done. And the second thing is, you know, how are you going to pay for it? And that ultimately is, you know, the first thing that they'll say is we're out of money. Well, we're giving, and some of these are near and dear to people's heart, but we're giving almost $5 billion worth of different credits a year through various mechanisms that are outlawed in the tax expenditure report. So that money's coming to the state, but then is redistributed to other people based on legislation. And that's why, you know, it's time right now. Do not, you know, until we figure out what the total cost of, I think it should be sunsetted, until we realize and get to full sustainability and capacity for several years, 4, 5, or 6, you certainly don't need to expand this program at this point, especially since the program was initially passed because of these caps that were put in place.
Joined by former State Senator Tripp Pittman here on the program. Senator, though, something else that kind of where these programs tend to be targeted? Where are they putting these economic development projects? And they don't. The latest being Mazda Toyota, I think one of the big ones up there. I mean, like how it's a wealth of riches up there. If we're gonna do something else, do we at least need to start trying to steer things in other parts of the state? Now, I get it. There's logistical problems, transportation, probably some labor issues as well. But at some point, it seems to me that you got to kind of spread it around at least somewhat if you want to maintain these kinds of programs.
Well, obviously, when you get to apportionment, you know, just like in Congress where you have, you know, a few metropolitan areas that control, you know, the House of Representatives or have a big say to, you know, say in where things go, where monies get expended. But you're right. I mean, the politics is the process of dividing up other people's money, and where you have political power and where you have political, you know, because a very few people in a legislative branch control things. You know, it's not a democratic process. I mean, the golden rule, the leadership that has the money that lets the money be distributed decides to some degree who gets on the ballot, who gets elected and who stays elected. But the money definitely flows to, you know, where the strength is in the political representation. There's a certain amount of demand, and part of the reason that certain members don't vote against things, whether it be, you know, Al Dott or whether it be Commerce or whatever, is they don't want to get the ire of these people that have lots of money to be able to spend when it comes to deciding where that money's spent.
Well, that's one of the complaints I hear whenever I go around the state, and I talk to these mayors and you talk to these members of the county commissions, et cetera, that they just think the state's playing favorites and that they don't like it. They don't think it's an equitable system. And look, I get it. Like there's sort of a meritocracy and sometimes with some of these things, but there is something to that as well, that there is the favoritism. It doesn't necessarily come out of the legislature, but coming out of the governor's administration.
Well, politics isn't beanbag, Jeff. It's brass tacks. And, I mean, it's how we fight our battles. And you're right. I mean, it comes down to that's why elections have consequences. And that's why it's important to not only know what party somebody's in, but what's their philosophical grounding. What do they believe in? And what's their, you know, what are their beliefs? And when it gets down to it, you know, and most of the time, you're going to know where you are on an issue based on what your core beliefs are. But the state gets plenty of money. You know, they are rebating, you know, anywhere from 30% to 60% of the money they're receiving back to certain groups. And some of them are some of the tax deductions that you get on your tax return. But we do have taxes in our state. We have there are things we can eliminate. The only way to limit government is to limit the amount of money they have. Okay, they can spend. They'll spend every dollar you give them, and the federal government will print and borrow all they can get away with. So, I think that right now we need to be conservative. Let's find out where we are. We've done some good things in the last 10 years. We haven't had proration. We've got the rolling reserve average. We have some surpluses, but we need to find out what the total costs are on some of these benefits that we do have, and we need to consider on reducing our income tax, taking the tax off of groceries. Do some things that are beneficial, not expand Medicaid with health care that we're not going to be able to sustain and afford because that system is gained and so many dollars from the federal government may go away at some point and we'll be left with those costs. You know, let's be fiscally responsible. Let's be conservative. let's figure out what the total cost. There are benefits to these programs, but, you know, the winners and losers are not getting picked by the people. They're getting picked by these different boards and these different committees that get formed based on this legislation. And these people are not necessarily, as you pointed out, they have their own prejudices or their own favoritism on where they're going to locate projects and what they're going to support or not support.
And we'll wrap it up kind of on this, though. Is it, if you were to do something that was going to benefit everybody on this, in this arena, on this economic incentives, where I don't have to move to Georgia for a year and then come back to get the break. But, when you hear these governors from Texas and Florida, they're traveling around the country trying to recruit business, and they're saying, you know, maybe there is a smaller, more scaled down economic incentive thing they can do. But bigger picture, like tax rates and infrastructure and education, where do you put that focus to make Alabama more appealing?
Well, you know, education is always 2/3 of our state budget goes to education. Education is it's working in some places. It's working in a lot of places. It's not working at all in some places. But education is about the future. I mean, a literate society is important for the individual's ability and also to participate in a Republican society where they can discern the facts from the fiction and make good decisions. But we have money in education. But again, I was the chairman of the education budget. I was the chairman of the general fund budget. There is so much money there that gets diverted into special programs with wonderful names. It's nothing more than just ways to influence people. I mean, you know, the compliment I got from one of the former heads of the legislative fiscal office was, "Senator, you get votes cheaper than anybody I've ever seen." The point was, I wasn't having to do things for members to pass budgets, but that I was able to figure out ways to not spend a bunch to get the votes I needed. You know, politics is the process of dividing up other people's money. And the best way to do it, the best thing to do is to try to limit the amount of money that government has. Because, you know, in the movie Outlaw Josey Wales, it was said that doing good ain't got no end. And government trying to do good with people has got no end, but there's always unintended consequences.
Senator, we got to leave it there. You're always very kind to make time for us, so let's talk again soon.
Hey, hey Jeff, and roll tide roll.
Well, you had to do that, didn't you?
I did.
All right, well, enjoy the game out in Austin. Guys, we got to get a break here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5.